Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Let's go. Let's go, Angel.
Bring the whole new meeting with that.
Here we go.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're missing it on the Zoom, Robert. Doing the time is now thing, man. So it's just it brings on a brand new meaning now after LSU the bridge took down Caitlin Clark.
Yes, sir.
Oh man.
Hey, that was for the culture, man.
That's what we're doing today. We're rocking the jazz. Okay, Rob.
It's a New Orleans.
I thought that
jazz,
was LSU
throwback.
Yeah, they're playing the Lakers today. That's the Jazz playing the Lakers. That's what we're doing. Okay.
It's New Orleans Jazz. Not about the Utah Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what are the chances of you going to Utah and go to the Jazz concert, man?
Yeah, that ain't never happening, though. No. It's too late.
They need to give it back to us.
Man, they need to confuse people. They be buying tickets for the wrong game. You know they can't do that. People are stupid, bro. You give people too much credit. I thought it was only Utah here. I have to be bad with Nate.
You know, when New Orleans got a new franchise in 2002, they asked for the name back.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did. Utah said, hell no.
What is Utah going to be? Seriously, what would they be? The Utah Mormons?
Man,
what name would they be?
Man, come on, man. They were in the 90s, man. They had those jerseys with mountains on their jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Utah Jazz. You remember John?
Yeah.
They had those mountains. Come on, man. Give up the name. Snowboard.
I don't know. What's the one of the mountain ranges or whatever that's there? Name it after that.
Mountain lions or something. Come on.
And that's the mountain lions.
We should start a commission to change the name.
Yeah.
Woo!
Jazz was created in the streets of New Orleans.
True.
Been hot about the Jazz. That's okay. You know, it's all good. Hey, welcome to Talking Sports and 12th Man. The month of April is upon us, the 4th. And we just got a lot of things to catch up on. We got some NCAA to talk about. We got to talk about some stuff with LSU, UConn, and let's kick it off as always. The number to call the show is 424-243-9519. Follow us on the Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, 12th Man Sports on Facebook, which is facebook.com/talkingsports with the 12th Man or 12th Man as always. So, we got to talk about it. UConn, they are right back at the top here, and let's talk about that. You know, are they officially a blue blood is the question right out the gate. So, kick it off, Rob. This is probably started. I didn't even ask how you guys doing, man. My apologies. You guys doing good this evening?
Oh, yeah.
Bad.
You're doing good, man.
Thank
LSU,
you.
National champs, man. Ladies, doing good. We ordered our paraphernalia. It's on the way.
Well, yeah, I'll talk about mine when Rob gets done with his speech about UConn.
No. Oh, UConn. Yeah, I definitely think they're blue blood. I mean, when you win five championships since when the first one was in 98, 99. I mean, you're talking about five championships in the 24-year time frame. And, you got to give Jim Calhoun a lot of credit, man. That basketball program was horrible prior to him coming along there. And they've been able to get a lot of big-time recruits over the years. They recruited New York City well. They recruited Houston well. They were able to get into Baltimore, D.C. market pretty well, like Georgetown's backyard. And so they recruited tremendously. I mean, you think about the players that they've had over the years, Ray Allen, Rip Hamilton, Mecca Okafor, Ben Gordon, Khalid El-Amin. Anybody remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Scott Burrell. I mean, you even go back to those days. Tate George. And they were the ones who really turned the program around. And so, yeah, I definitely think they were blue blood. And, man, the way they dominated this tournament, they won an average by 20 points per game. There's only been five teams in NCAA tournament history that averaged winning every game in double digits, and they're one of them. I'm not saying this is the greatest team of all time, but this is one of the best tournament runs in NCAA tournament history when you average beating your opponents by 20 points per game. I mean, they totally annihilated Gonzaga, the number one offensive team in the country, and held them to 54 points. I mean, it's unheard of. So this is quite a run. And they're going to be going into next season. A lot of talent coming back. A lot of these guys stay. And he's got a heck of a class coming in. He don't have a Kentucky class coming in, but he's got a good class coming in. They could be very well right there in the thick of things again next year. And their style of play is very NBA-oriented. They move the ball up and down the floor. They get the bigs run. And so you got to like their style of play. So he's going to be able to continue to attract some talent.
Yeah, well, I was going to say is that, you know, a bar that I go to watch games and hang out with my friends, we do every year a NCAA bracket challenge where, you know, you put in 10 for however many slots you want. They fill up, right? And then, they, you know, 1 through 68, and then we do a drawing of the names. And then the way you do it is when you get your team, they have to only win. If they win, they have to cover the spread. If they lose, they got to cover the spread. And it's if your team loses, if you got an underdog, if they cover the spread, you take the higher seed and you move on. So long story short, I ended up for Fairleigh Dickinson to Florida Atlantic to San Diego State. I just needed San Diego State to cover the 7.5, and I would have won. And they got destroyed. I was sitting there watching that game like, oh, my God, this is so bad. When they got to 5 points, I said, okay, we might got a chance. And then, you know, it's just that they're just too deep, man. UConn with Snogo and Hawkins. And then they got time with 3-point shooting. They play outstanding defense. We thought San Diego State played good defense. UConn played some incredible defense in that game. They took everything away that San Diego State liked to do, especially in the paint. They were just too big for those boys down low. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, are they a blue blood? I mean, when I saw that graphic, man, they've got one more national championship than Kansas. They're tied with Indiana and Duke with 5. So when you talk about a blue blood, then nobody wants to – doesn't really put them in there. They always feel like, oh, they're a good story. But at some point, they cease to become just a good story, right? they join the party. I think they're already there.
Yeah. You can make case in the last 24 years, they're the best college basketball program. I mean, from 99 to now, they have 5 championships. I don't think any program has got that many in that span. And,
no.
Yeah, I think Carolina's got 3 in that span, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And, I don't think anybody has that many in that span that UConn has. So I mean, definitely a phenomenal run right there. And
they're just sitting one behind Carolina. Yeah, they got one left to Carolina now. Carolina's got 6, and UConn's got 5. And when I saw that come up, I was like, damn, we have really been taking UConn for granted in terms of they're just a little niche story, you know, this, that, and the other. Now, man, those dudes belong. They have belonged. I think now with this dominant run that they actually like, hey, man, y'all stop talking about us like we're not on a level with Duke and Kentucky and North Carolina. You got to put them in that conversation sure. So, yeah, I would say to answer that question, they have been a blue blood. They just reminded us last night that they definitely are a part of that conversation.
Yeah. And they 5-0 in championship games, too. They've never lost
5-0
in championship games. That is insane. And they have a great following. I mean, they're both their men and women's programs have a tremendous following.
I was gonna say women's, don't forget about
the
women.
Yeah, they
got
a tremendous basketball fan base.
So that's a true definition too. Both the men and the women's side, the women have the most championships in women's history. They got like 11 on the women's side. 8 for Tennessee, and then, like, there's, like, Baylor with 3 or something. I was looking that up, too, which is crazy. So, again, both the men, you know, obviously UConn's taking a little step back, but it's just crazy how, you know, like you said, Rob, both sides have been have been up there as well, too. So that's crazy.
Well, their women's team is going to be back in the top 5 next year. They had some injuries this year. They're going to be right back up there and running again.
They get baby girl back. She's a beast. ACL was a huge blow to that thing. Yeah. Her name was Kate, but I know she could fly that ball.
And they had a few injuries, too, this year. They had a tough go this year. Still made it to the Sweet 16. And, And how about the women's championship game on Sunday? The most watched women's championship game ever in history. Mm. So, So
you know why.
103%
black
higher ratings.
Black versus white. It's true.
You know what?
Same way Michigan State, Indiana State. It's got that kind of undertone to it. So, yeah, I'm sorry, right?
Yeah, no, you hate to say it, but he's right. And, 103% rating increase from last year, that's insane.
That's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about that and talk about the UConn squad, because there's a lot of things we can discuss, if you will, man. So it's like, which direction to go, because like I said, we talk about that or jump right into the elephant in the room, which is Caitlin Clark and Angel.
I'll say this about Caitlin Clark. Well, first I'm talking about her game, and she can flat out ball. And this girl pull up from half court like Steph Curry. And she's the generational women's basketball talent. And she's got to come back to school. Totally off topic. They need to get rid of the rule for the women's game, too. I mean, if the men could go pro at 19 years old, they should let the women go pro at 19 years old. I know that's totally off topic. They should let that go. She's got to come back another year. She could go straight to the pros right now. But that's totally off topic. I will say this about the Caitlin Clark thing. I have to give her credit the way she's responded in a lot of the interviews. And she said, look, I don't have anything against, you know, Angel Reese. I mean, that's just competition. That's, you know, we talk trash. And, that's what we do. I mean, I thought that was classy. And then the other thing about Iowa going to the White House, she said, no, we're running up. Last I checked, only the champions
that's
go to the
crazy.
White House.
That's crazy why they did that, man. Oh, my God.
That was just
Jill Biden. Don't even say that. That was Jill crazy after I said that. And she's been getting killed on TV all day.
But like you said,
her husband tried to come in and clean it up
man.
A little bit.
That's crazy, right? Because, you know, it's just interesting because, you know, Caitlin, like, she is – one player doesn't make a team. I mean, she carried that team and then ran into a squad. They ain't letting her beat it. You know, she played well, but her team just wasn't good enough to overcome that. You know, LSU was like,
She did it, though. So – she was so dismissive in that game, when she chewed her out, LSU took that personally for South Carolina. And when they came out and said, oh, you ain't going to defend us like that, and she was disrespectful up there, these Bayou girls, they are going to play with Caitlin. I knew they were going to do them like that.
They said
y'all ain't going to do that to us.
They didn't appreciate that at all.
I was shocked Iowa beat South Carolina, number one. I mean, I saw them play early again. They beat LSU by 20 points in the regular season. And, although the game was at South Carolina, but still, I mean, I was impressed with them. So I was shocked that Iowa was even able to beat them. But,
well, you
got to
give
Iowa
the coach some credit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had a great game plan. And if she had just not been so dismissive in what she was doing in that game, I think LSU probably still wins. But they gave them so much motivation, like, hey, you know, we SEC, whatever, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, you're not going to treat the other team like that, because we all both get called hood and all that other stuff. So you're not going to do that and show out. We're going to get our chance. We're going to put a stamp on it. But I agree with you, Caitlin. That was really classic for today. Like, hey, man, we talk trash. It's like the dudes talk trash. Like, we've chicks. Y'all expect us to play it like we out here in tennis skirts and whatnot. Like, we out here diving for balls, talking trash, all the stuff like everybody else. So, you know, don't put that on us like that. So I did appreciate her coming out and saying that, you know, defending Angel, even though that shouldn't have come today, I will give her a lot of credit for not taking the bait and being able to say, hey, I got this following of people that will agree with me if I come out here and rip her. That was really, really classy move on Caitlin's part. But she opened the floodgates with the, you know, the Cena and the Elite Eight. So, you know, you got to give like you receive, right? So there it is.
Mm-hmm. What's that statement? He who crows loudest eats the most crow, basically. So there you go, man. So that's what they used to always say back in the day, man. So you gotta take it.
Yeah, to Rob's point, I don't know if that'll work as well for the college game, letting them be one and done. So I think the reason why this game and their following for the UConn teams and the South Carolina teams, and now for Caitlin going into next year, and the Paige Becker is her name for UConn, having that continuity, the wife can talk about how it hurts the men, where, you know, you don't really get those 3 or 4 year players. I think it really helps the women so much that you can get behind the team and see them for those 3 or 4 years and grow with them. Yeah. I don't know if Caitlin, having done it, because she was balling like that last year, she's taking a step forward, don't get me wrong. She balled last year too, right? And you see Angel and them, you know, get together. You see the South Carolina having that continuity with their team. I don't know if we get behind it as hard as a country if they are coming in and out like men do. Like, I just don't know if that is. I think if what has to happen is they got to get paid more money in the WNBA. And I don't know what their NIL deals look like in college. So I can give you that for the money. But, like, when they go to the pros, unless you are just the creme de la creme, they're not really making a ton of money. They might be making on par. If you're Caitlin Clark and I, which is NIL deals, which you might make as a rookie in the WNBA. So from a growth of the sport, and like you said, 103%, you know, kick in the championship game, I think it kind of helps them for them to stay. It sucks, but that's a bigger conversation. Their monetary value in the ecosystem of basketball is a different discussion. And if they had that, then maybe, but they don't have that yet. So, you know, they kind of almost need to have to grow their brand individually and for the universities.
Yeah, and I agree with that from the game perspective. I was just mainly referring to it from an equality perspective. And
gotcha.
I think if you're going to allow the men to do it, you have to allow the women to do it. No, I agree. I mean, the longer they stay, I think you're going to get a better game. There's no doubt about it. You know, I think we talked about, like you said, we talked about that last week about the men's game, how, you know, you look at the 90s, you at least saw these teams together for 2 to 3 years at least, and you had a pretty good product in the college men's game. And but just from an equality standpoint, you can't say the men can go at 19. But yet the women's got to finish at least 4 years of school before they can go into the professional ranks. Just from the equality standpoint, when you look at men versus women rights. Absolutely. The longer they stay, the better the product we're going to get from a college game, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you guys watch The Daily Show? Do you watch The Daily Show, any of that, with Roy Jones? There was a good clip. He was making fun of Roy Jones Jr. He's one of the comedians. He was basically talking about this topic.
Roy
about
Wood.
Caitlin, about Andrew. He's like, yeah, Roy Wood. Yeah, that's something of. Yeah. You know the guy that's the correspondent for that. Yeah. So he made a comment. It was hilarious. He's like, yeah, you know, this is probably the best thing for Caitlin because she's probably there dunking. You know, like she's probably pissed off. I'm gonna get you. You know, so. He's like, this is bringing back shades of, like, Larry Bird and, like, Magic Johnson. You know, he was, like, cracking up. So it was, like, I have to send that to you guys. It was probably one of the funniest clips, too, because he was, like, you know what happens when you make a white woman mad? You know, he showed all these movies like Carrie and, like, you know, Single White Female. It's like, yeah, you know what that happened. He was, like, I was, like, oh. It was pretty hilarious because he was.
Caitlin better get some more sisters on that team.
Yeah, I told you they talking about going to Iowa City, man. If you don't stop that, but you know, we might mess around and get another kind of Duke UNLV thing, right? Where they meet again. So you might have that back on the plate. Who knows? I know you guys will have a lot to say about that. But yeah, you know, sisters ain't trying to go to Iowa City, bro. Stop it. That is not gonna be their first, second, or tenth choice. They're going to Iowa City only if that's the only place they can go.
They're gonna
get their hair and nails done in Iowa City. They're not going to damn Iowa City.
They may say, we don't need you. We don't need your sisters. We got this on our. We can do this by ourselves.
Hey, we have a section down the road in Davenport, Iowa.
Man, listen, I didn't think I'm going to Iowa City, bro.
Let's talk about really quick in the top. Anything you want to talk about top five championship squads? I mean, I'm hurt, man, because, you know, it goes back for me because I know 2004 Georgia Tech, you know, played UConn, Emeka Okafor. I remember that, you know, that squad back then. Just you're like, you know, it's just you kind of go back to, like, certain squads that you remember. It's hard to rank, right? You know, there's a stretch where Kevin Ollie was coaching, so you kind of think of, like, all the teams and Jim Cotter. So if there's I don't know if you want to talk about any of the championship squad, pretty amazing at the time.
Yeah, that run that Kimball went on.
Kimball Walker.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
one
for me.
The first one is the best one to me, the 98-99 team. I mean, that team was 34-2, Rip Hamilton, Khalil El-Amin. That team was phenomenal. They won the Big East tournament. They won the NCAA tournament, of course, too. So, I mean, they were phenomenal. They were ranked number one that year for 10 consecutive weeks. So they were dominant throughout the year, and they won the Big East tournament. And that's hard. You know, it's hard to win those back-to-back tournaments like that. And you win the Big East tournament, then you come right back and win the NCAA tournament. If you notice, a lot of times the champions don't win their conference tournament. Like Connecticut didn't this year. They didn't win the Big East. Marquette beat them in the Big East tournament. And even though it was a very close game, I mean, that's hard to do. And that team was just dominant throughout the year, 34-2. And then the second one, is, Dre mentioned, Emeka Okafor and Ben Gort. I mean, that team went 33-6. And Duke had them in the semis. I don't know if y'all remember that. Emeka Okafor got in foul trouble. And they got behind in that game. And in the second half, they just went on the rally and came back and beat Duke by, I believe,
one point.
In that game. And then, of course, sorry, Dre, but, you know, they just dismantled Georgia Tech in the national championship game that year. The third one, to me, is this team. I mean, you can average winning by 20 points a game. 31-8, and a lot of people forget they started this season 14-0, and they went through some injuries too. They got them a little off track too this season, but now they got healthy at the right time and they went on a roll. I mean, they were ranked as high as number two this year when they were 14-0. This team, so I will put this team as the number three team, and I got the Kimball Walker team number four, and he had an incredible run, Kimball Walker, that year. You know, in that year, they won the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament. And Kimball Walker was just lights out. He was a player of the tournament in the Big East that year, and he was the NCAA tournament player of the year that year, too. And then the last one was the Kevin Ollie team to me. I mean, they won that one as the number seven seed. And I think Villanova's the only team that won the national title with a lower seed at number eight when they upset Georgetown in 1985. So Shabazz Napier was the star on that team. And they beat four teams that were in the top 11 in their run that year. So that was pretty impressive, too, what that Kevin Ollie team did as a seventh seed. I can't remember what their record was. No, they finished 32-8 that year. So still pretty phenomenal.
The only reason why I say that about the Kimball one is not that, because, again, they had the battle in that. But that Big East tournament that Kimball Walker had was just one for the ages. You will watch one day and be like, damn, well, they got to be out of gas. There's no way they come back and do it again tomorrow. And they came back and do it again tomorrow. And like, oh, okay, come on now. And then do it again. Like, they won 11 straight games in there from the Big East tournament through the NCAA tournament. Like, he just caught fire. And that's why I always say, if you get you some outstanding guard play, especially in the NCAA tournament, it can carry you to the title. That one just lives with me because he was so ridiculous. for both of those tournaments back to back. He's like, damn, Kimba, like, how do you keep topping yourself? And then he topped himself, and then he topped himself. So that's why, for me, that one just was the most memorable for me in terms of the five that they've got.
Yeah. Definitely
it's
memorable.
It's crazy to think about
sure.
the players,
Absolutely.
Too, that got, you know, I forgot, like, Donya Marshall that got drafted, Ray Allen played, you know, Caron Butler, the beat play, man. I'm like, man, I forgot these players that played for UConn, man. It's crazy that you remember all this stuff too. But yeah, they had some squads, man. So
They had a lot of great teams that did not win a national championship. They had a lot of teams that were number one seeds that didn't win it. Hey, those Tate George teams back in the day, they were number one in the country for a while.
Andre Drummond played there too. Yeah. Man, it's crazy. Good stuff. All right, Rob, let's get to the, really quickly, let's talk about the top five or early top five basketball for next year.
I got UConn still there. You know, unless we hear of them losing a lot of players or anybody, I can't see the team going to the transfer portal after just winning the championship. Unless they just some guys just go pro, I got them right back in there. They got a lot of guys coming back from this year's team. Even Jordan Hawkins is only a sophomore. And, you know, as good as his game is, I'm not quite sure. I think he could still elevate a little bit more from the NBA perspective as well. So if he comes back, I can definitely see them. Kentucky got four of the top 10 recruits coming next year. And it looks like he's got some guys coming from the transfer portal, and he's keeping some players on this year's team. So I got Kentucky back in the mix. Looks like Duke was able to keep a few of their top freshmen. They're losing a few as well, but they got some more coming in. So I hate to say it, I got them number three. Kansas losing Grady Dick, but they got more talent coming in, and they're able to keep a lot of players. So I got them at number four, and I got UCLA at number five. So that's my early look at next season.
Anything out of that, JQ? Hey, what do you say?
Nope.
I got you. All right, let's get it going here. We got to talk about the mock draft here for NFL. We're going to switch over here tomorrow. Anything else to talk about? We've talked enough about Caitlin Clark and about Angel Reese, so we're good about that, right? We're good, right? Nothing else to come from that? All right, good stuff. Let's do it. Let's talk about some NFL potential steals, Rob.
All right. I got quite a few names on here. Darius Rush is one guy that comes to mind, cornerback from South Carolina. He's really been doing great so far in all of his post-workouts from the combine. He graded the combine at a 4.36, 6'2", has long arms. His tape wasn't very impressive, but I think he could still be a steal with the right coaching staff. Right now, I got him going in the top of the fourth round to the Bears at 103. Next guy, Tyjae Spears, running back from Tulane. Had a really good year. Tulane finished in the top 10, beat USC in the Cotton Bowl, 5'11", 195 pounds, really shifty, can run between the tackles, can catch the football as well. I got him going in the fourth round as well to New England. At 117, Deuce Vaughn, 5'5", all 5'5 of them. Guy got 5'5 for thighs. Yeah, but he's explosive. Reminds me a lot of Darren Sproles, can catch the ball out of the backfield. I got him going in the fourth round as well to Dallas at 129. Jared Bernard Converse from LSU. I got him going 133 to the Chicago Bears as well. This guy didn't even get invited to the combine. He had a real impressive senior year. But, man, he was lights out on his pro day. I think a lot of scouts came back scratching their heads. So he was really impressive. And he had a really good senior year for LSU this year, too. You know, he played his first 4 years at Oklahoma State. Came to LSU, had a really good year. Didn't even get an invite to the combine. But I think he's going to be a sleeper. Nick Hampton, edge rusher from Appalachian State. I got him going in the fifth round to Cincinnati at 163. This guy is a tremendous athlete. He's only 6'2". He's 240 pounds. He's going to bulk up a little bit, but, man, this guy is lightning fast, a tremendous athlete. It's right about where he should get drafted, but somebody's going to get a steal with Nick Hampton. I got him going in the fifth round. Tank Bigsby, running back from Auburn. I got him going to San Francisco at 164. You know, Shanahan likes his running backs, and I think Bigsby could be a surprise there, too. Yeah, another running back, or a couple more running backs I have on the list. Eric Gray from Oklahoma, another guy who's got great bursts. I got him going 183 to Detroit. Kendre Miller from the TCU. I got him going the third round of Baltimore. And this guy ran for over 2,400 yards last couple of seasons, 29 touchdowns. So I think he's got some real good sleeper at the running back position in these mid to late rounds in this draft. Cody Mock, offensive tackle, North Dakota State. I got him going to Buffalo. I think he can play tackle or guard. He's 6'6", 320 pounds. Michael Wilson, wide receiver from Stanford. I got him going to Cincinnati in the third round. I think he's going to be a sleeper, too. I mean, 6'2", 215, ran a 4.5. If you look at his 2019 tape, you know, he's a first-round pick. But in the last few years, he's missed at least a few games every year. That's the only thing that's holding him back. But in his, he was looking like a 6- or 7-round pick, but he's been extremely impressive in all of his workouts. I can't see him dropping below the third round. So I think he's going to be a guy that's going to surprise if he can stay healthy. Hendon Hooker, I think he's even climbing up draft boards again, too. I still got him in the third round in Arizona right now. But he's been quite impressive in his interviews. It looks like he's way ahead of schedule in his ACL recovery as well. A lot of scouts think he's going to eventually be a starting quarterback in this league. So he's another guy. The last guy I want to highlight, give Cincinnati some love, Tyler Scott, wide receiver from Cincinnati. I got him going in the latter part of the third round in San Francisco. 5'11", 185, a little bit small. But he is lightning fast. He ran a 4.32, so it's extremely quick. He definitely take the top off of defense, and so he's a guy that could be a sleeper in his draft too.
Yeah, he struggled because the quarterback that came in for Cincinnati behind Desmond Rivers sucked. So it's hard to get the ball when that's good when your quarterback is trash. So yeah, no, I know about Scott.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Rob, mock draft. Let's do it.
Man, I'm talking a lot, huh? I'm going to get tired of listening.
Talk about Mac Jones and Lamar Jackson. Over there too. That's some big stuff to talk about, too, man. That's I'm saving
all right
for that, too.
I'm going to top 10 picks here, and I'll cover our team.
Yeah, okay.
Gary's not on, so I don't have to talk about the Cowboys tonight.
He's on his way to Palm Springs apparently. So is he going to that pickleball tournament? I wonder.
Pickleball tournament.
Like,
yeah.
Are you texting me about that?
He might be listening to you. So Gary, if you're listening, I apologize. You got to call me if you want to know what I got for the Cowboys. So go to
Shout out to Gary. Shout out to Gary.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. So the top 10 here. I still got C.J. Stroud number one. Look like all indications are Carolina's narrowed down to Stroud and Young, but I'm still going to say they're going to go with Stroud at number one. Got Bryce Young at two. I moved Jalen Carter back up into the top five. I got him going number three to Arizona right now. Anthony Richardson, I got him going number four to the Colts right now. I moved him back up as well. Will Anderson, I got him going five to Seattle. Another surprise, Bijan Robinson. Got to move him up to number six to Detroit. Detroit looking for some explosion on the offense. Obviously, they did get David Montgomery, but that was to replace Jamal Williams. They're looking for somebody that can hit home runs, and Bijan Robinson will be that guy. So I moved him up to number six. Christian Gonzalez, he's a plug-and-play cornerback. He's a starter day one. I got him going to the Vegas. A tremendous athlete, tremendous ball skills. So I got him going number seven to Vegas. Tyree Wilson, edge rusher, Texas Tech to the Falcons. 6'6", 270 pounds, prototype size. Got off to a sluggish start when he was at Texas A&M early in his career. But he's already a very solid run defender. And I think he's going to, with the right coaching. And Ryan Nielsen is a tremendous defensive line coach who the Falcons hired. I think would do wonders for him. I hate to say that. Paris Johnson, offensive tackle, Ohio State, got him one of the Bears at nine. Justin Fields. And Luka Van Ness, edge rusher from Iowa. Philadelphia continues to get help there as far as rushing the passer. So I'll go over our teams here really quick. In the latest seven-round match, we already heard the Falcons by Tyree Wilson. I got him taking Luke Weichler, interior offensive lineman from Ohio State in the second round for the Falcons.
Like that.
Center. Well, I think he's going to also play some guard in the NFL as well. Jamie Robinson in the third round, safety from Florida State, 5'11", 197 pounds, ran a 4.45. Started his career at South Carolina, did well there as well. He's got great change of direction ability. I think he'll be a solid pickup for any team in the mid-rounds. Tre'Davious Hodges-Tomlinson in the fourth round, a cornerback from TCU. The only knock against him is his height. He's only 5'8". 175 pounds. Oh, when you look at the tape, man, he plays bigger than his size. 4.4 speed. I mean, he won the Jim Thorpe Award as well, too. So he's got, I think, he's going to be tough in the slot. I think a good value there in the fourth round. I think he'll be a tremendous defender in the slot position. Trey Palmer, wide receiver from Nebraska. First 3 years at LSU, didn't put up the production, but last year in Nebraska, 71 catches, 1,043 yards, tremendous speed. I think he can help you in a return game, too. So it's a fifth-round pick. Jalen Redmond, edge rusher from Oklahoma. Anthony Orji, linebacker from Vanderbilt, 6'2", 230. Ran a 4.7, but he's a smart player. Make him help you in special teams, a reserve linebacker. Late, this is a seven-round pick. And Tyon Evans, running back from Louisville, 5'10", 210. Really good pass catcher out of the backfield, too. Could be somebody that can help you late. The Bengals, round one, got Darnell Wright, offensive tackle from Tennessee. Guy did not give up a sack the whole season to Hendon Hooker. Did not give up a sack the entire season. Phenomenal year. Some scouts wonder if he's a right tackle or is he a guard in the NFL. Definitely a good value there late in the first round. Second round, I got the Bengals taking Mekhi Blackmon, cornerback from USC. Had a tremendous year last year. He's only 5'11", but he's got long arms. You know, ran a 4.41 at the combine. So I think he's a guy. I already talked about Michael Wilson, the wide receiver from Stanford in the third. In the fourth round, Amari Burnin, linebacker from Florida. These linebackers got great coverage skills, and you need these kind of linebackers with the passing game right now. So solid guy that can help you on the pass defense. Nick Hampton, we talked about him already, edge rusher from Appalachian State in the fifth round. And then the sixth round, somebody was reading a Bible growing up, Habakkuk, Baldonado, edge rusher from Pittsburgh.
That's funny.
Got the Bengals taking him in the
Hezekiah over here.
Yeah. 6'4", 258 pounds. He actually had a down year last year. He coming into the season, he looked like he was going to be a guy that was going to be drafted in the top three rounds. So got him going in the sixth round. Still has a lot of ability. We just had a little bit of a down year and falls to the sixth round here. And then the seventh round for the Bengals, Kayvon Merriweather, safety from Iowa, 6 feet, 212 pounds. Ran a 4.55. Tremendous, smart player. Obviously, you'd like your speed to be a little bit better than that in that position. And that's why he's going in the seventh round, but he's definitely a heady football player, takes great angles on the field. Could be somebody that can help you in the special teams game or backup safety. Saints, the guy's taking Miles Murphy, edge rusher from Clemson in the first round. Obviously, you got to prepare for life after Cameron Jordan at some point. Carl Granderson really came into his own at the defensive end position for the Saints, so he's been a bright spot. But Miles Murphy reminds me a lot of Bradley Chubb coming out of college as well. 6'5", 275 pounds, about the same measurables. Second round, Tyreek Stevenson, cornerback from Miami. I think he's got a chance to convert to safety in the NFL. Another guy with long arms. The speed was about 4 or 5. You'd like for him to be a little bit faster than that. But his game tape is tremendous. Matthew Bergeron, with that last name, you want to be in New Orleans with that French last
Bergeron.
Name, right? he's actually from Quebec, another French area, you know, French area of Canada. Offensive tackle from Syracuse, 6'5", 324. I think he could be a guard or a tackle as well in the NFL. You got impressive balance and lower body control. Our Jatavius Martin, safety from Illinois, versatile defender. Illinois moved him all over the field. They played him a linebacker in certain situations. They played him safety in certain situations. So definitely a virtue. And he's got good ball skills, too. So got him in the fourth round here. In the fifth round, you got the Saints taking Anthony Bradford, offensive guard from LSU. They stay close to home and get some depth on the offensive line. Also in the fifth round, the Saints got two fifth-round picks. Andre Izavas, he's from Honolulu.
Yeah.
Wide receiver from Princeton.
Anybody
somewhere.
Awesome.
Carlton Banks is dancing when he gets drafted.
Oh,
yes.
It's not unusual to be loved by you.
But in all seriousness, he was really impressive at the Senior Bowl. He's got good size and speed. He's 6'3", 201. I think he could be a really good possession receiver, and he's got good speed. He ran a 4.39, and like I said, it was impressive at the Senior Bowl. Saints got 2 7-round picks, too. They go another wide receiver, Jahri Jenkins from LSU. And this guy has the size. He's about 6'4", 215 pounds, tremendous athlete. Did not have the production that you would like for somebody with that kind of talent, and that's why he's going here in the 7th round. And last but not least, Braden Willis, tight end from Oklahoma. He's a guy that had the production, tremendous blocker, but you worry about his size at the tight end position. He's only 6'2", 240 pounds, Ooh. And that's the reason why he's going here in the 7th round. So, you know, he could be possibly a third tight end on somebody's team.
Good stuff, Rob.
No, that was a lot.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
no complaints
again,
here.
It's impressive. Yeah, it's impressive. You know, everything after free agency is over, we're still kind of curious what's going to happen. You know, as far as with us, I mean, you know, we're still debating if we need the edge or the cornerback. I'd be upset if Christian Gonzalez goes pretty high, but you know, I don't know what we're going to do now. Obviously, we signed Calais Campbell. That was a pretty big move. So I'm not sure what direction they're going to go. Are they going best player available? Is Bijan Robinson there? I mean, I have no clue where they're going to go. But it's got to be either edge, cornerback, or the like. Like I said, for that first pick, they're not going to draft a guard or tackle. I don't think Skoronski is even in there. But that's kind of what we're looking at right now. I'd love to get a center. I'd love to get a left guard. I'd love to get depth for safety and a wide receiver. You know, so those are the positions that you'd like to get right now. But, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. So, I'm sure, like you, JQ, you want what offensive lineman still? Are you good with the offensive line right now for the Bengals? Or
no, they got
it. No? You still want more?
Injuries happen.
No more. Okay.
Injuries
happen.
You watch. Well, the thing about it is, you watch the questions. I always look at Andy Reid. Wherever he goes, you see it. He's gonna get his skill players. When they get to that draft, they're gonna go in that offensive line. They're gonna go in that defensive line. They're gonna get in the trenches. And I would love for the Bengals to adopt that philosophy. Now that you've hit on those perimeter players on the outside, you pay them to keep them, but you keep rebuilding and keeping it moving by keeping that defensive line and the offensive line stacked. So, like I said, I have no problem with that. We need more edge rushers. We need more depth at the offensive line. Some of them dudes that played for us last year don't even need to be on the team. So if we can get some better players in the draft and cut them loose, I'm 100% with it.
Rob, you didn't have a quarterback for you guys, right, for the Saints, right? Did you have them draft a quarterback for the Saints? Did I miss that or no?
Not in this mock. I have had the Saints drafting a quarterback in the mid-rounds in previous mocks. I think I had Aiden O'Donnell, a quarterback from Purdue, in one of the previous mocks. I actually had him to the Falcons in a previous mock, too.
Right.
But none in this draft.
So you're probably good with Carr. You're pretty much good. You know, you're not no depth or anything like that, right? You're pretty much good with so far for the Saints.
I wouldn't be surprised if they take a quarterback. I don't think they're going to take one in the first 2 rounds, obviously. I think if they do take one, it'll be the 3rd round at the earliest, because I think Jameis is only signed for 1 more year as a backup, so we don't know what that's going to look like. So, you know, a lot of times these teams are drafting for the next year. Even though they're drafting now, they're thinking the year or two down the road, too, right? So, you know, who's going to, you know, is Jameis going to be the long-term backup? You know, do somebody give him another opportunity down the road? So, I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if they take a quarterback, but I definitely don't think it'll be in the first 2 rounds. I think they're definitely good with Derek Carr for sure. I mean, they think he can play another 7-8 years. So.
Yeah, it's interesting since we're kind of transitioning, because now we're talking about what's happening with the Patriots here, and Bill Belichick doesn't like to be. You can't be disloyal to him, man. You know, he's gonna let you know. He's gonna get rid of you, man. You can't be going against loyalty, man. So whenever Mac Jones went outside and sought counsel outside of Bill Belichick, I think he was talking to Steve Sarkisian, right? And so he was like, "No, I'm done." So that's the word on the street, man. So do you really think that he's gonna get traded, guys, or what? I'll start with you, JQ. What's up with that, man?
I, you know what? I think he would be traded if somebody was in love with Mac Jones and were willing to meet the minimum threshold to get him out of there, because Bill Belichick is a dick, and we all know it. But the thing is, you can't get mad at Mac Jones. Like, you performed an experiment with your second-year quarterback, right? Like, oh, I'm going to get two dudes who have no basis of offensive football play calling and say, hey, here, for my young quarterback, here, you take him and develop him. And Mac Jones is looking like, man, what in the hell is this? So I can understand his frustration. Like, he's got to do a little bit better job of keeping it channeled a little bit when he's on the sideline or on the field. But when you have no idea what he's hearing in that headset. These two more idiots that don't know what they're doing, probably stumbling over themselves, trying to mess up the play call. Like, if you're Mac Jones and you said continuity with Nick Saban and having those playmakers on the outside, and you come there and you're thinking, oh, man, I'm getting Bill Belichick. He helped Tom Brady be this. And then he just decides this year, you know what? I don't need no offensive coordinator. We're going to just make it work with these guys that I like. Like, I get why Mac Jones is upset. So it really makes Bill look bad to me to let that leak out like that, given that the whole country, every week we get in and talk about the Patriots, that's the first thing we talk about when they're going to get a real offensive coordinator. So you get mad at him for talking to a real offensive coordinator to try to help himself out. I would be, maybe you don't let that leak out, but I would be more ecstatic if I'm Bill Belichick that he's frustrated enough, he cares enough to try to get better, even if he feels like he can't get better with the people in the building. He's still trying to get better. He just can sit back and say, hey, I've got everybody who knows sports on my side saying, what in the hell is New England doing? He could have sat on that and said, you know what? They know they fool. Somebody's going to give me an opportunity at some point because they feel like I would deserve to be a first-round pick. So, but, you know, Bill Belichick is just in his own way right now, trying to get in life past Brady. He just won't get out his own way. I could see him getting traded. I don't think they're just going to give him away. So you're going to have to give him a decent offer. But it wouldn't shock me if we looked up closer to the draft and somebody swung for it. But I feel like a lot of teams have either filled their QB vacancy, especially the starter, or they plan to come get one in this draft in the first round. So that would be probably the biggest hang-up to him getting traded.
Yeah, I the main reason why I don't think he is going to get traded, I just think most teams have already moved forward with their off-season plan. And I think they're going to be with them. I mean, Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick, but I think just about everyone has kind of moved on with their off-season game plans right now and what they're going to do, right? And so, no, I don't see it. I don't see the Washington Commanders going after him. I just don't see it. I think they're stuck with giving Sam Howell a chance and things of that nature. I think the Falcons are going with Ridder and Tyler Heinicke. And, I just think that, I think the Buccaneers are moving forward with Baker Mayfield at this time. I think everybody's moving on with their offseason game plan.
Washington's interesting. If I'm Washington, I'll at least kick the tires and see. Like, because you don't know what you're going to have to say and how over the course of the season. Like, I think Mac Jones is showing enough glimpses to where you're like, you know what, if he would get somebody that knew what they were doing, play calling, could he be better? Like, you know what I mean? They're going to his third year. That's why I agree with you. That's why I said that at the end, right? The teams, I think, are probably kind of set themselves up. But the other piece of that is, if you're in these other teams, did you know the dysfunction was that bad that Mac Jones would become available when you were making your offseason plans, right? So we've gotten this far down. And you're thinking, okay, they're finally getting an offensive coordinator. They'll be cool up there. And then, 3 weeks before the draft, you hear this come out, and do other teams sit back and say, do we reevaluate what we're doing? Does Mac Jones move the needle enough for those teams to say, hey, let's at least give New England a call? I don't know if people view him that high. So that's just only the teams can answer that question. But I agree with you so that's probably the biggest impediment to him getting traded. People have already made their plans.
I can see the play calling X, Y, double, what?
Yeah, you know that was hot trash. You know it was.
I can call this play.
You're looking like. Yeah. I can 100% see that.
Lamar Jackson finally reveals why he didn't travel the Ravens Bengals game. This is interesting, man. So this is on you, JQ, man, because we talked about his injury. This is pretty interesting news, to say the least.
Yeah. What my only question is, if you're Lamar Jackson and Baltimore is just abusing you in the PR game right now, he looks so awful and all this agent and all this crazy stuff that he's doing. Why would you wait so long to come out and say this, right? Like, if that's the real reason. That, when I went to, I think it was Pittsburgh, and he said his knee, I guess the travel and whatnot, it swelled back up.
Swelled up.
And it was like, that's just not good for me to be on the team plane. Why not just say that? You know what I mean? Like, he needs somebody better in his ear, because everybody would have said, okay, that makes sense. Like, I'm sure all the players have had that happen where sitting on that plane, I mean, you know, I'm sure they got more leg room, but sitting on that plane like this, you know what I mean, or trying to keep it, and you're not be able to move it around, and it swell up trying to do all that traveling and walking, you know, it makes sense to me that if I'm trying to get him ready, they were already pretty much going to be a playoff team. If I'm trying to get him ready for that, why would I even concern myself with that? If as long as he's at the facility 2-3 times a day, getting treatment around the clock, trying to do everything he can to get back, then who cares if he's on the sideline for that game, right? They were both going to the playoffs anyway. So I don't understand from his standpoint why you would take all that abuse for so long and not just come out and say, hey, man, hey, throw up on me on the last plane trip. I'm not getting on the plane right now. Period. Point blank to end. And if you don't, you know, like you said, suck it if you don't believe me, but that's what it is, and this is why I'm doing this. Like, he's got to get somebody better to advise him, because he's taking unnecessary bullets. And having this sit out there this long when you could have just nipped it in the bud makes no sense to me.
Rob?
Hey, I think JQ covered that one quite nice. I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why? Hey, I don't even think I have anything else to add to that. I totally agree.
Why?
Yeah, I was reading that.
Why do you wait months?
Yeah, I was reading that. It's
months
crazy because
of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
You're probably thinking somewhere in there that, you know, that, hey, they're going to stick up for me some way, the Ravens. And it just shows you just how bad this is turning into, man, because, you know, I don't know what the Ravens are doing. You know, one minute they say they love me, then they don't. You know, it's just that they want to basically die. We want to trade it. It's just a weird situation right now, too. So when I was reading that, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, Raven, y'all could have said something, too. But then, you know, Lamar's like, he's chilling, whatever. The truth's going to come out eventually, is probably what he's thinking, but he's taking unnecessary bullets, like you said. So it's just, you know, he's taking it because the Falcons fans over here, they hate him. And I'm like, you know, they're acting like he's a bad teammate, and he's not a bad teammate. This dude was a former MVP. So obviously we have a different viewpoint of him, you know, because he's a black quarterback. So I just think everything is ultra sensitive, right? You know, I hate the fact that when the look score and blah, 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 and, you know, but you're just like, dude, he's not getting fair treatment. He's not going to get the same money as a Josh Allen, yet he deserves it because he was an MVP, you know? So it's just a weird, the collusion, it's pissing me off, you know? So I don't know.
But any other piece that they pulled the offer back, right? They said that they didn't have it all guaranteed, but for like the first 3 years, it would have been like 175, so his average would have still been like in the per year. And they were like, well, that deal is no longer on the table. I'm like, why is that deal no longer on the table? Do you really want this dude back or not? Like, if you put it out there and people are like, come on, Lamar, you should take that deal, you're going to say, well, it was here, but no, little mofo, you can't have it no more. What? What? Who does that to a franchise quarterback?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to save it out here and then pull
terrible.
It back. It's weird.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. And it's tough because Lamar basically did – he was like, I'm going to play – he bet on himself, and he lost because he's like, I'm going to play on this, didn't get the contract, and then he got hurt, which is the worst thing to do. So now he's like, well, now I want my guaranteed money because I'm not doing that again. And now he's like, oh, how dare he get his guaranteed money? But it's like if you had the agent to be like, yo, he was an MVP, he saw this many touchdowns. I mean, that's why the agent comes in and says, this is what we're going to take, you know, and then – Let's negotiate a deal. But it's just it's just like you said, there's only one word to say, just how weird the situation is for sure. I don't know if that's gonna happen, man. So I mean, damn. Sit out for a year.
The last thing
Lamar,
I will say on this is that he's from Miami. All those dudes that stick together, that's from the Dave Broward County area, like the Chad Johnson, one of those dudes that has made it and come out the other side and has some money, they need to call that brother and say, hey man, you only gotta give me a little bit. I don't want to go 3%. I just wanna get you out of the situation. We Miami. I want you to be well. You know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised one of them dudes down there that's from that area hasn't just reached out to him and said, man, I got you. I'm doing this because I love your game. I love you. We from Miami. Let's get this done. Because he just needs that. Somebody needs to just step forward and be like, come on, bro. Let me be your big bro in this situation to get you through this thing. And then your next deal, you worry about that then.
Yeah, I agree 100%. All right, we're wrapping this up, man. Any last things you want to talk about? Because there was a topic we talked about, the Panthers. They didn't want to trade Derrick Brown or Brian Burns to the Bears. Like, oh, hell no, you ain't getting that, you know, just because they just felt like it's
smart
to replace those two stalwarts.
Or J.C. Horn,
you know,
too.
So that was a good move.
They inquired about J.C. Horn,
Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ryan Brawl was like, come on, man. Like, nope, nope, nope. And so you got to give them credit because the Panthers stayed true. And, you know, I don't know if Brian Bros lost that one. But they
had a plan.
Like, yep.
Hey, they're four positions. Yeah. You just don't. If you got an elite quarterback, you got an elite offensive tackle, you got an elite pass rusher, an elite cornerback, you don't trade them people. I mean, those are cornerstones of your franchise. You know, Derrick Brown's a defensive tackle. I get that. But Brian Burns is an elite pass rusher. But Derrick Brown is also an elite defensive tackle, too, in this game, too. And so, yeah, they got some pieces on that team. And, you know, they could still be competitive even with a rookie quarterback this year, too. I really believe that. And I hate to say it because they're in the
division.
Yeah.
They keep drafting, signing people. Yeah.
And
go
you
ahead,
get
Brian.
Miles Sanders. Like,
Yeah, you keep
forgetting about that. So I'm like, and the offensive line wasn't bad because when you lose Christian McCaffrey, and
they were still running the ball down three people.
Running the ball down people's throat.
Yeah.
You knew they couldn't throw the ball, and they were still running on people. So the offensive line is not bad. So
Deontay
Freeman is what I was looking for. So if you know that those pieces don't need to exist, Rob just named them off. You don't trade those guys. If you have a plan to move up, okay, I'm going to get my quarterback, my franchise guy. Boom, I got that. I can go give me a number two and Thielen. I can go give me a pass catcher in Hurst. I can give me a dependable back in Miles Sanders. And if I come out this draft with my quarterback, another wide receiver, and, you know, in the later in the mid rounds, and another offensive lineman or two just for depth, you look at that team and you're like, well, damn. Okay, I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but they take a big step forward. It's really odd to me, not odd, but weird that you have two teams make a trade and you like to trade for both teams. Right, like I like what Chicago did for Justin Fields, and I like what Carolina's doing for themselves, especially when you look at what they did for themselves in free agency. So, if you're a fan of the Panthers, you have to feel good about that.
And they still have a draft pick in every round, and so they trade up a lot of picks, but they still got at least one pick in every round. And so, I mean, they still got a lot of picks. They spent a lot of money in free agency. I know I sent you guys the CBS Sports. I know Andre and myself didn't like it the way they graded the Falcons and the Saints perspectively, but they did, you know, give kudos to the, you know, Carolina and what they have done, and rightfully so. Yeah, Frank Wright and Carolina, they have experienced the same thing. Both of them, Frank Wright with the Colts, was going after these veteran quarterbacks. It didn't work. Carolina kept going after these veteran quarterbacks. It didn't work. So they came together and said, you know what, we're going to go trade up to a number one spot, and we're going to go see if we can get a franchise quarterback and develop him. And so both of them said, to hell with this. We're not going through this anymore. We're not signing the Matt Ryans. We're not signing the Carson Wentz of the world. We're not signing Sam Darnold. We're not bringing back Cam Newton for a third go-round. You know, we're not going through this. We're going to go up and trade up and get a franchise quarterback, hopefully. But, ladies and gentlemen, you guys recognize the music at the end of our live portion of the show tonight. We thank you all for tuning in to another great edition with Talking Sports on the 12th Man. Hey, Charlotte, we're just talking about y'all on the East Coast. Call us on next week. We want to hear from y'all and see what y'all think about the Panthers offseason. The draft is just a little bit over 3 weeks away. Who are y'all going to pick? For Charlotte, 11 o'clock Eastern Time. We want to hear from y'all. Chicago, we want to know how y'all feel about the trade, too. That's going to be 10 o'clock Central Time. Mountain Time Zone, Denver. We want to hear from y'all. Looks like you're going to have the number one seed in the Western Conference. It's going to be 9 p.m. Mountain Time. The Lakers are on the run. How they performing tonight, JQ?
They won in overtime.
All right. Not good for my Pelicans, but congrats. The Lakers, Los Angeles. It's going to be 8 o'clock Pacific time for you all. We know Fresno. We got to give y'all a shout-out. We know y'all Lakers fans in Fresno, too. And 49ers fans, too. They are, really.
Yeah, no, if you don't mind putting the topic back for the top five robberies next week so we can touch on it, I want to spend some time on that if we get a chance to. I appreciate everybody for listening. I know y'all excited. Stay with that. Hey, get you some hockey in your life. Hockey is good stuff, people. We don't talk enough hockey on the show. But get you some hockey in your life. It's a great sport to watch if you can get into it. I'm sorry, I've been working a whole lot of gladiator games, so I've been watching a whole lot of hockey these past couple of years. But expand your horizons, good people. We'll talk to you next week.
Now, that's a good point, JQ. I've become, just being in Tampa, I became a hockey fan, too. I think just following the lightning, there, it's kind of got me a little bit more into the game, too. I know they don't talk about it much, but, yeah, I've become a fan of it, too. Yeah.
You know, just
especially,
give the people a little bit more.
Going
to the
going to the games are a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, yes. It's a great environment, great experience to go to a hockey game. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I go to a lot of bad ones watching gladiators, but I've been to some professionals who make your games. It is still fun.
Yes. They all come out of the
good squad.
At the end of the game, they all snag a tooth, but they are.
They got the money to get it fixed.
Yeah, back in the day, Edmonton Oilers was my favorite squad. They just had a great style as far as the way they played. The game was wide open, and then you
Wayne Gretzky,
because just like and then the Thrashers actually, whenever they were here, I was a fan of Ilya Klobuchar. It was good to see. I remember getting a couple, tickets for that, and it was just kind of until that went downhill. But it was interesting to see the game too. So just kind of
you'll never guess who my team
is. Who's your team? The Blues?
The Pittsburgh Penguins.
What?
Oh, my. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Listen, so a quick story, because I got to get off here. I know we all got to get off here. So when I went to FAMU in 1995, my brother gave me his Sega Genesis, and he had NHL 95 on it, right? So imagine a whole dorm, a floor full of black dudes all in there, coming in my room to play NHL 95 and getting mad at each other and talking all kind of trash playing hockey. Lemieux and Jagr and the Penguins was my squad. Like, I could play with anybody, but when they started to get good at it and I had to, beat them down because it was my game, that was my squad. It's just been my team since then. It's the only thing I like about Pittsburgh. I got a homeboy from Pittsburgh and the Penguins. It's the only thing about Pittsburgh I like.
Wow.
Wow.
That is
who knew you were still a fan too.
Of all the squad.
Shit me. But this. I told him, I said, I don't have any Penguin stuff. When I get one, I'm gonna get that light blue old one. I'm not getting no black and gold. I will put no black and gold on my body.
you take me back to Sega Genesis, JQ, because then we used to play Lakers versus Celtics. We used to play that game so much, man. And
I love that game.
It was just back. That was like one of the favorite. Like, you had like all the old school squads from Tim Hardaway and Golden State, and just Clyde Drexler, and they had the signature moves. And we used to play that game. I mean, and this is interesting because we talk about load management. That's my last point. And you had like squads. Like, you had your first starting squad, then you had your second squad. Your second squad. And I don't think they do that anymore. I don't think they have in the NBA right now where hey, this is your starting five, then you got your they do like massive switches, and that's how.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to play 82 games without having problems, So this whole load management thing, I think it's bull crap. That's just me, but like have a starting five, have a backup five. You should be good. So, but I digress.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But that's how we used to play
back
in the day.
I'm somewhat in the middle of the load management though. And the reason why I kind of hate it though, because sometimes the star players, especially if they go on the road city, and they only go to that city one time a year. And they don't play.
Yeah.
Now that I don't agree with, unless they just really hurt. If you go into a city where you only playing there one time, that shouldn't be a load management game. I'm sorry. The fans are coming to see you, right? So I think there's a middle ground, but I think there is some science to support it though too. Especially when you look at we'll use LeBron James for example. Especially somebody like him. I mean, what did he play, like 9 to 10 straight years in the finals? I mean, there's some science to support that he needs to, if you go back, Jordan played all 82 games in his last season, but the few years before that,
he
played like 60 games. And so if you go back and look at that, so he was playing like 60 games. As these guys get older, they're not going to recover from these injuries as much as they did when they're younger. But I think there is some science to support it, but I think they need to be more cognizant of it when they go on the road, especially to these cities where they play 1 year.
Agreed.
Have to play 40
that should be a move.
They don't have to play 40 minutes a game, though, or night, excuse me. You know, so maybe do like 25 or so. I mean, I don't know. There's a way to make – I mean, I'll say my last story. I know we got to go. Cause I remember whenever Jordan had his last game here at the Georgia Dome, Michael Jordan. And there was – I've seen him play like three times. And the last time that he played, I'm like, I'm going to go see the game. I was like high up there, but he played, you know. I was like, man, I saw Jordan for the last time he was here. I still kept the tickets up. Like, man, I got to see him, you know, for the last time. But can you imagine if I would have spent all that money and he didn't play? It would have been like pretty disappointing to me because, you know, that happens a lot, right? Same thing whenever me and JQ were talking about going to a game versus LeBron, and he didn't even play. I mean, they kept like, well, nobody's going to play. Well, nobody's going to play. Those tickets were like almost $600, something crazy like that. And I'm like, man, I ain't spend that much. And if I would spent $600 – and if he didn't play, I'm like, yo, F that, man. That's bullshit.
Hi.
Sorry.
Yeah, they need to be doing that at home games when they're going to do it. They should be doing it at home games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll leave it on this. The NBA injury report is bullshit. Okay, yes, it should be a home game, but you can't tell people 17 minutes for the game that a dude ain't going to play. Like, come on now. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. They got to get some kind of hour, 2 hours beforehand. They knew that dude wasn't going to play. You can go all the way up to the game. They're like, oh, he ain't gonna play. Come on, bro. Don't do that to the people. It's terrible.
They gotta get their money though. Ouch. That's what they're trying to get their money, man. But all right, gentlemen, have a great rest of your week. I'm sure we'll be talking soon, man. Generous. Somebody gotta make money, man. All right, gentlemen, be good, be safe.
All right, y'all.
Peace.
Peace.